Hey, it's Kelly. And at the end of every week, I like to share something true and useful, something I stumbled over that gave me a burst of optimism, something you can share with friends like an audio greeting card, something to help us all keep our eyes on what's working and what could be. So I'll be right back with this week's For the Good of the Order. This is Kelly Corrigan Wonders. Kelly Corrigan Wonders is brought to you by Progressive, where customers who save by switching their home and car save nearly $800 on average. Quote at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. So a huge part of my life is trying to figure out how to be a better parent to these two kids I've brought into the world. And I had been hearing a lot about a guy named Ken Ginsberg. He's on the Today Show and Good Morning America, CBS Morning. He's also been on CNN and NPR. And he had this quote that spoke to me, which is, as we raise children, our goal has to be to prepare them to be happy, healthy 35-year-olds. And there was something about that framing that really spoke to me. So I asked him if he would have a set of conversations with me about some very specific things, ways of reframing almost the way we think about parenthood. So here we go with number three. I have laughed with my girlfriends that there's just a tremendous amount of rejection in parenting and during these teen years. And sometimes you're being rejected, not for other friends, which I would take that all day long, but for their phone or for like to watch reruns of The Office. Like those are the most common things that beat out hanging with me. But the other thing is that I have found that if I just start doing something nearby, in earshot, in within their peripheral vision, that they might drift over. And yeah. so that has worked.
Other things that work, you know, when we have like those serious conversations, those eye to eye, let's talk about things, kids run for the hills. But when we're driving and we're not talking about you, we're talking about things we see. When we're watching TV and we're not saying, how will you relate with your friends? But we go, what just happened there? We use the environment to begin conversations. And Kelly, here's the thing. They might, you know, the phone's another whole subject, right? They might choose the phone over us. And I am not rejecting the reality that parents are sometimes rejected. I'm asking parents to not be pushed away because of it, instead to understand it. If your relationship is rooted in love, which I'm certain it is, know that the same child who pushes you away during the day might need you at 11 o'clock at night when she got a message on that phone that was devastating to her. And if instead of you're going, well, like now you finally need me, instead you're just welcome and there. Our presence, showing up for our kids and being there sometimes on their own timeline is the way to go.
My favorite metaphor for all this is to be the edge of the pool. And they swim around in the middle and they go to the deep end and whatever. And every now and then as they get older, they come and rest on the side of the pool.
I think that's a gorgeous metaphor. And I think that it's very accurate. And when we hover during adolescence, when we are incredibly controlling or demanding, you'll do what I say, why? Because I said so. We know that our kids will ultimately run away from us. But remember what our goal is. Our goal is to raise a human being who's prepared to thrive. And our goal relationally is to be interdependent with our kids. The time in our homes is a small fraction of the relationship you will have with your children, right? My children are now young adults. They're 26. honest to God, they're my best friends. And if I had said that when they were 17, that would not have been ideal parenting because they didn't need friends then. They needed guides. They needed me to be at the edge of their pool. They needed me to honor their growing independence and let them make some of their own mistakes and figure things out with me being the lighthouse, with me being the person they could come back to. And if I was over-controlling then, I would have made them think as young adults, I can't be with my dad because he's going to always tell me what to do. Instead, we had an open communication, a respectful relationship. I was firm when I needed to be, funny when I needed to be, but ever present. And I loved them fully and completely. Once they were confident they could stand on their own, once they were in flight away from the nest, they've looked back and now I have the relationship of my dreams, right? And now I don't, you know, that relationship, God willing, will last another 30 years. And during those 2 to 3 years when they were pushing me away, I understood it. I never stopped loving them and I chose not to be hurt. That doesn't mean I wasn't frustrated, right? Being frustrated
and
is okay.
And it doesn't mean that you didn't have to do that little routine in your head where it's like, I know you just seemed really dismissive of me or rejected a kindness offered, but I'm deciding to interpret that as a move towards your own independence, which comes with some level of anxiety, which makes you almost slightly mad at me because you don't want to need me and you don't want to, you know, it's better for you to have less ties to me right now so that the release will be simpler for you.
I think I'm going to agree with almost everything you said, except for less ties. I would say be less controlled by. The emotional ties remain critically important, and that is different than being controlled by. Being controlled by is you'll do what I say. The emotional ties is I know who you are and I love you completely. And I also think it's really important for the listeners who have an 11 or 12-year-old now to understand that adolescence has its moments, as do all human relationships. Human relationships are complicated. Here is a human relationship with someone you love more than anything in the world, and now it's going through a complex phase, right? But I think it's important not to expect the worst because that will create the problems. Let's talk about that typical moment. You know, your kid is 10 years old or 11 years old. You're in the grocery store line. They have their head on your shoulder and the mother of the 14-year-old behind you says, get those hugs while you can. She's become a monster you may not recognize, right? That is a typical experience for many parents entering adolescence. My next book is a very positive view of teenagers to refute this undermining message that really is a self-fulfilling prophecy. It does not deny complexity. It does not deny the importance of needing to communicate in a way that's effective for the adolescent brain. It doesn't deny our role as guides and sometimes as disciplinarians, but it frames this period of time as an opportunity for growth, including strengthening our relationships that will last until you're 120 years old. And this reframing right now is urgent because if parents of the 11-year-old are influenced by that mother who says she's going to become a monster, you are going to expect it. You're going to operate from a fear-based approach. And guess what? You know who else is listening? The 11-year-old. And what she is hearing is, oh, to be normal, I'm supposed to reject my parent. To be normal, I'm supposed to be a pain in the butt. And then what happens is they love you so much that then they become fearful of their own development, which is something they couldn't stop even if they wanted to, Kelly. So this whole mythology around adolescence, this whole talking about the complexity and the problems is really undermining to our relationships. How often do you get together with your best friends and just talk about all the wonderful, not very dramatic, but wonderful experiences you had with your spouse? No. You're going to use that opportunity to talk about the fight you just had, because that makes more interesting conversation and it's at the top of your mind. But when we focus the experience of raising adolescents only focused on the challenges and not the opportunities and not the little moments, we paint this period of astounding development with a broad brushstroke that is undermining to them and undermining to our relationships.
I mean, I think this is such a great point to make, because it is so normalized and it's such a pat thing to say, like, oi, teenagers, right? You know, it's like, oh, my wife, it's like Rodney Dangerfield-esque, you know? But, and it's dumb and it's oversimplifying a really complex, interesting moment in all of our lives. But the other thing is, it's not so much a mythology as it is a misinterpretation. Our behaviors going on house to house when parents and teenagers stir it up together, there might be a real pattern there of frustration and door slamming and whatnot. But what's happened, what the reason for that is what you're trying to introduce, which is that the underneath that, the motive that's driving all of that tension is this clear horizon that both parties can see where we're going to separate. And that separation is making us a little nutty real time.
I think all that is true. And I want to underscore that separation is not our goal. Interdependence is our goal. But healthy interdependence happens only when both parties also have independence, right? Let's be clear. So you're not controlling so that your child will learn to fly on their own. And when they learn to fly on their own, they're going to choose to come back to the nest. Sometimes, right? But I want to point out that this misinterpretation of adolescent development is not a simple process. It is deeply, deeply dangerous, because the most important question, or the fundamental question of parenting adolescents, is, do I still matter? And we know that parents are vital as guides and as these lighthouses, as these stable forces for their kids. And when you believe that kids think they're invincible, which is absolutely not true, or that kids are inherently risky, which is absolutely not true, if you believe that, then you will naturally do nothing but control and protect their kids from themselves instead of developing them. If you think that kids don't care what we think, you won't engage. If you think that kids can't be reasoned with, you won't attempt to do so. When instead we understand the truths about adolescence, which are complicated, but we understand the truths, we can approach it developmentally, we can engage fully, and our families are stronger for it. So can we spend a couple minutes talking about the truths about adolescence?
Yes. So I just heard two things that I want to underline. One is they are not naturally prone to risk. And two is that they do not believe they're invincible.
Absolutely. Kids actually worry about danger a lot. That doesn't mean they don't behave sometimes in ways we wish they wouldn't behave, but they worry a lot. And this is key to know, because they want us to guide them and to keep them safe. So kids are not natural risk takers. What they are is natural experimenters. Kids are super learners. The adolescent brain will acquire new knowledge at a pace unmatched in the rest of the lifetime. Only from 0 to 3 and during adolescence are kids super learners. Where does learning occur? Learning occurs at the edge of existing knowledge, right? And so kids' brains are literally wired to expand into new territory. Their brains, what's called reward centers in their brain, literally go like, when they're having a new experience. So kids love new experiences. They love stretching. When adults are not involved in their lives, that stretching will go into territory that might be dangerous. But if adults create clear boundaries beyond which kids can't stray and create golden opportunities at the edge of existing knowledge so that the adolescent brain is fully stimulated within safe territory, then kids do not need to go into risk territory. Then when they've conquered that new edge, you expand the edge in a way that they can safely handle. When adults do that, the adolescent brain will continue to enjoy new experiences, but avoid risk. So it's all about the framing. So hear me clearly. Adolescents are natural experimenters. That is how they grow because they're super learners. Risk does not need to occur. Risk occurs when adults do not stay involved in the way they need to be. Okay, and let me give you one more piece. I'm going to use the metaphor, if you don't mind, that you talked about the edge of the pool, right? So it's the same thing. We're creating those boundaries of safety. If we tell the kids how they should swim in the water, when they already know how to swim, they're going to reject us. So when we become over-controlling in the territory that they absolutely have conquered, they will not let us set boundaries. But when we give them the space to learn, to fall, to fail, to pick themselves back up, and then we give them safe boundaries, they will trust and appreciate those boundaries. So it's all about the framing.
I'm thinking again about my own adolescence, and I'm thinking more or less, I think my parents did a great job. I think they're great people. I think they were really devoted to the task. And I think whatever mistakes they made were completely pedestrian. And I took a lot of risk. I mean, I did some things that were really dangerous.
I was also not an angel. All people across the board include some risk-taking. What I'm trying to do, Kelly, is not paint with a broad brush an entire developmental period inaccurately. The range of risk-taking is different in all human beings, including 40, 50, and 60-year-olds, right? Mm-hmm. And I am not claiming that no child will ever stray into danger with good parenting. I'm not claiming that at all. I am saying that to cede the territory entirely because you think adolescents are going to be risky is a literally deadly mistake, not to mention very unwise. We absolutely can create influence and we absolutely can create appropriate boundaries. But when those boundaries are rigid, kids will find ways around them. When those boundaries expand into the territory that kids can safely handle, kids don't need to go into the risk. Might they make dumb mistakes still? Yeah. You know why, Kelly? Because they're humans.
A real takeaway for me is distinguishing between the hot stove moments and not hot stove moments. Like when to intervene or when to try to intervene. I mean, my kids are 19 and 21 now, so I'm pretty late in the game, but I do feel myself wanting to have continued influence and also feel that it's somewhat unwelcome. And I think maybe it's because I burned some chits entering territories that are counterproductive and that I should have saved my thoughts for things that are moral concerns, as you say.
So I can't go back in your own life, and I don't know you, but I know that you're a deeply reflective human being based on this conversation. And I know that kids, your kids at 19 and 21, will benefit for decades from your seeing the complexity in things and your wrestling with big decisions. What is really helpful is for your kids to know that you love them without condition, accept them fully, recognize them as experts in their own life, and love them more than anything they could ever imagine. And therefore, you remain available to them as a sounding board. You remain available for them to enjoy life's pleasures and you remain available to them for any advice that they're going to want in the future when they are also struggling with life's complexities.
So, my takeaway is that the adolescent brain will acquire new knowledge at a pace unmatched in the rest of their lifetime. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for sharing. I'll see you on Sunday with another Thanks for Being Here. And until then, on Instagram, @KellyCorrigan.